There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you are not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. Qualifying, Steve.
Okay, folks, I'm here at Hockenheim with a name and a face very familiar to Formula One fans, Miss Anne Bradshaw. And welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today?
I'm very well indeed, thank you. Yeah, we've just finished our races for the weekend in Formula BMW Europe, and so I'm quite relaxed.
Okay. Now, recently there was news that BMW is pulling the plug on their Formula BMW program, which is very sad because Sebastian Vettel, Nico Rosberg, quite a few people came from the series. What will happen of the cars in the series, will it continue in some of the guys?
Obviously, the teams who are competing and the people organising it would like to see it continue. We have to talk to a lot of people. It was very sad that BMW pulled out of the series, but we understood their reasonings, their change of alignment. So it's now down to people who organise everything on the track to talk to all the important people in this world to see if some sort of way forward can be found for us. So, I mean, we've had a lot of support from all people around the paddock, including, as I say, the drivers who have gone through here. Seven of them are now into Formula One racing, apart from the other drivers who are test drivers or reserve drivers. So we have a lot of support, and we hope that we can find a future for this series, because I think it's important for youngsters to have somewhere to go.
Now, the US series was stopped a year ago, with this financial meltdown going on, so it was very understandable. Surprisingly, the Asian series will continue. Is that the plan, to keep it going for the long haul?
Well, basically what's happened is the BMW have withdrawn from both series, but the organising club, like I say, we have an organising club who organises. I mean, BMW, it's their championship, but they employ an organising club for Asia and for Europe, and those respective clubs are now working to try and keep it going. They've already announced that for Asia, they do an awful lot more away from Grand Prix. We do seven of our eight races in a Formula One paddock. They do just a couple in a Formula One paddock. So in a way, it's easier for them to sort of make sort of these decisions more quickly. That will go forward in the same way we hope we'll go forward, but all of it will be without BMW, because they've pulled out of the Asian series as well, which is a shame, obviously, from every point of view, because particularly in Asia they've had a very strong field this year, a lot more than we have here in Europe.
Now, jolly old England is the centre of motor racing. What was your introduction to motorsports? What came first for you, a job in racing or interest in racing?
Oh, the interest in racing. You have family who love the sport, so ever since I was I suppose 10, 11, I used to go motor racing with my brother and my family. So I've seen Jim Clark race in a Lotus Cortina at Snetterton. I've seen a lot, and then my interest luckily led me to a job in the sport 39 years ago.
How many years?
39 years ago.
What was your first motorsports job?
I worked for a race organising club in the UK called the BRSCC, British Racing Sports Car Club, and we organised race meetings around the country. I mainly did ones at Brands Hatch, but we also did them at Snetterton and Mallory Park and Croft. So we raced, including non-championship Formula One races. Like we used to do the Race of Champions. We did sports car races with what was the Boac 1000. So that was what I first started with. So are actually organizing the events.
Now, racing in the world has changed quite a bit from the day you started your first job. What are the changes you like in motorsports, and what are the changes you don't like?
The changes I like is it's much safer. You know, I don't get so nervous when I see, and particularly like young kids like this going out, because I know that everything that could possibly be done to make their lives safe has been done, and I applaud what the FIA and everybody's done over the years. Also, you know, drivers who have campaigned. What I don't like, I suppose, I don't like the way that the top end has become distant from the fans. I know there's a lot of money, and you know, people have to do things to sponsor that. But I think it's a shame that the real true fans don't get so much access to the drivers. But having said that, they're now starting F1 autograph sessions, but nothing can stay still, so at the end of the day, that's the price you pay. But I still think that fans of the sport get, you know, if they come to a Grand Prix, they get a great experience. So you know, they might not get to touch the drivers, but they can see some of the best drivers in the world doing amazing things in the best cars in the world.
Here is your toughest question in 39 years of motorsports, and let's see if you can answer on air. Do you like Bernie Ecclestone?
Oh, I can't say whether I like him or not. That's a difficult one. I admire him. I respect him. I've known Bernie over the years. I can't say I'm a friend of his. I'm an acquaintance. So I like what he's done. I like that he has made motor racing an international sport, so that if I'm not sitting at a racetrack, I can put a TV on and I can watch my sport. And when I started, you couldn't do that. So I think, you know, he's raised the sport to a level that the world knows about motor racing. The world talks about motor racing, and it's with this sort of publicity, we've got it off the back onto the front pages as well. So I like him, because I think he's made a lot of money, but he's also made a lot of money for other people, and he's also helped the sport a lot.
Okay, we have listeners all over the world. What's the best way for a young person to get into motorsports from your side, which would be PR?
Obviously, be determined and never take no for an answer, and keep badgering teams and people. My sort of background is a journalist. So I'm a journalist by profession, and I've done so many different things in the sport, which is race organising, all sorts of things. I've come around PR, which my journalism did help. So it's a difficult one, because I get asked by a lot of people saying, how can I get in the sport? It's being in the right place at the right time, being determined, being a hard worker, and not being afraid of you know, sort of 24-hour days, and just proving to people that, you know, you're reliable and quick-witted, and a love of the sport does help. But I do find it quite sad that a lot of people I find working full-time in the sport don't have an interest in the sport, or don't know anything about the history of the sport. And I think it's the same that a lot of people, particularly perhaps in a Formula One paddock, have never been to a Formula Ford race, or been and seen a rally, or been to a rally cross. And I think don't concentrate on just, I want to be in Formula One. Say I want to be in motorsport, and look at every angle. And quite often that can lead you, into Formula One if that's where you want to end up.
And leading to Formula One, what teams and drivers have you worked with over your extensive Grand Prix career?
Williams was my major team. I did a year with Lotus through JPS. I've worked with Arrows, BMW, and Sauber, as they are now as well. Also, I've obviously the drivers I've worked with, people like Nigel Mansell, Damon Hill, Ayrton Senna, Alan Prost. I think I worked with seven Formula One world champions over the years, and a lot of non-world champions who have just been great people to work with.
Yeah. Now, this brings me to a question I asked Matt Bishop once. because you people like you have access to all the drivers. I asked him who are the good guys to deal with and who are the buttheads. So now you are not in Formula One. Let's drop some names, please.
The most difficult driver I ever worked with was Nigel Mansell.
Why would that be?
Nigel, for some reason, did feel the world was often against him, which was wrong because he was a great driver. But he often felt that people were out to get him or, you know, not treat him fairly. And it was a shame because, you know, he had such a talent and they weren't. But, you know, that was perhaps one. At the end of the day, you learn how to deal with them. Difficult people, you learn how to deal with them. Easy people, you learn how to deal with them. So perhaps, yeah, but he was the most difficult. I mean, obviously, the good people, people like Sebastian Vettel, Damon Hill. Prost was so easy to work with, even though everybody kept saying he's political. I never found that with him. I loved Riccardo Patrese. He was lovely. He was great fun to work with. I was a lot of respect for him. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's difficult because Robert Kubica was a great guy to work with when he was at BMW. I mean, yeah, so they'd all got their good points. Kurt was difficult, but at the end of the day, they're in a pretty stressed situation, so I can forgive them that.
Let me get your take on this. There was an interview with Damon Hill, and there are three drivers involved in this question. You worked with all of them in Motorsport Magazine, and he said that he worked one full season with Alain Prost and only a few months with Ayrton Senna. He said he never learned a thing from Prost, but learned a lot from Senna. Why would somebody like him make a comment like that? I know you cannot speak for him, but what's your take on that?
It's difficult because people, I don't know, different personalities. I mean, I obviously worked with him when he was with Alan. I worked with him when he was with Ayrton. And, I don't know. I mean, David always just used to get on with his job and we was, you know, do things. And obviously, I think, you know, and I worked with him when he was with Jack Villeneuve. And they seemed to get on well. I don't know. I mean, when you have a different view on things when you're next to somebody as a competitor than not, I suppose. Yeah.
Okay, another question that, you know, when I read, I said, wow. I'll give you an example. I heard that when Heinz-Harald Frentzen drove for Williams, the first time he went for a test session and his feedback was not the very best, Patrick had said to him, are you sure you're a professional driver? So the question I have is that true? And is he really a knucklehead to work with, Patrick Head?
I have no idea whether it's true because I wasn't working for them then. I'd left when Heinz Hall was there, so I don't know. Patrick is what you see is what you get. He's never going to be to go to a driver who's made a mistake and say, oh, don't worry. He's very direct. He can be direct because he's actually done a lot in the world. I tell you, if you go and talk to Nico Hülkenberg, he loves him. And they have a great relationship. But perhaps what he said about Heinz-Harald Frentzen, though it was true, I don't know. I wasn't there. But, I don't know. I mean, I've heard Patrick make some comments similar to that, which make me laugh, but I don't know. I like him. He's a friend of mine, and I think he's a great guy, and I think he's done a lot in this sport.
I hate to ask you this question, but very important part of motor racing history. Imola 94, you were there. What was the mood in the team when the race was stopped?
Well, the trouble is that it was a while before we realised the full implication. So obviously the race was stopped. We knew we'd got a driver in an incident, but we'd still got a driver in a race. So you have to let the people there, the medical, that take care of it, and we obviously had to take care of Damon, check that, you know, we didn't know at that point, and immediately, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's been written since about the car and various things. You just have to try and manage it because you've got two drivers who are very important, you've got a whole team, and you've got people who've been working on a car that became very soon evident that their driver was in a very critical position. So the team were obviously shocked by it all, but they still had a car in that race, and they had to be as professional as they could. Go motor racing, it's a dangerous sport. Ayrton knew it, his family knew it, but you have to manage the thing. And I think the team just had to get through that weekend the best way it could, and there was a lot of shock, but you just had to do your job and then go away and then work out on, you know, what went wrong or what didn't go wrong, or how to deal with having a driver in your car killed, which, I mean, it was, you know, it's awful, because, you know, the implications to the guy who was the last guy who put a nut on it, or, you know, it was a very emotional time. Having Ayrton in the car was Frank's dream for years. Suddenly it didn't happen, you know, it happened, and then it was finished. So no, it was emotional for everybody.
Looking back on your Grand Prix career, what era of motorsport Grand Prix racing do you cherish most? What era, what memories do you cherish most?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I've had so many different years, and I loved every year of them. I mean, my early years at Williams, when we were doing well, and, you know, I came in at the start of the Honda period, and we badly, and then when we started winning, you know, they were, you know, sort of when you're talking of suddenly you've had an unreliable engine and suddenly it's winning, they were great. I mean, obviously, yeah, I think 87 was a good year. I won't say one was better than the others. The year Damon won the championship was good, because him and Jack got on well together. There was no animosity in the team, and Jack Villeneuve was a good guy to work with. I liked Jack, so that was nice. Perhaps because we had perhaps that was the last year you could think, well, we won a championship and had a lot of fun doing it, and the two drivers ended up as buddies, not as you know, tearing each other's throats out like some trucks are doing these days.
I really appreciate your time. Finally, how about a message for our listeners? We have listeners all over the world.
Well, I just think that the sport is very lucky to have people around the world watching it. I'm still shocked at how many people remember me from my Williams days and come up to me, and all I can say is I've been in a very lucky position to do what I've done, and it's thanks to all those fans who I think are great, and motor racing fans are the best in the world, and I just hope that they're still enjoying their sport, and I like meeting them.
Same here. Thank you very much.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, recording and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.